Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back to another Q&A podcast episode. I have Coach Lauren here with me. Hi, Lauren.
Hello, Nicole. How are you doing?
I'm good. And panicking for just this second, because remember how I said I was going to read a review every time we did a Q&A?
Yes.
I managed to forget every time. So I'm quickly scrambling to pull up my podcast app and I'm going to read a review for us.
Yay. I love hearing these.
I'm going to pick a random one and we're going to go with _AMAE. I cannot recommend this podcast enough. I stumbled upon it in a search for mindful fat loss. After 22 plus years of extreme dieting and inevitable binging, I couldn't do that ride anymore. I hopped off the diet roller coaster and tried the anti-diet body positivity haze extreme for a while. The whole time, I couldn't get rid of this nagging thought in the back of my mind. I still desired weight loss. And with dieting being the only answer I ever had for it, even though it clearly wasn't the answer because it wasn't working, I didn't know what to do. After a lot of soul searching and working on trusting my intuition, I began looking for resources on mindful fat loss and weight loss. Nicole's podcast is one of the few really solid resources of information I came across, and I've been absorbing it every chance I get. She presents such sound science and research-based information in a really sweet and genuine, yet tough love way that really resonates with me. Very grateful for Nicole and the work that she does. And she is sharing her knowledge with the world via this podcast.
Oh, that's amazing.
So sweet. Yes. And that was like quite the extensive review. It just kept going and going. And I was like, oh my gosh, this woman didn't just spend 30 seconds leaving a review. She spent 5 minutes. That's the highest praise.
Well, and what a relatable story too. I'm guessing that so many people in our audience can relate to that. Like, I need to diet, and then bouncing so far the other way before finding that sweet spot in the messy middle that we like to talk about. Like, that's so relatable. I think as so many women have gone through that very similar journey, spending their lives trying to diet, then trying to accept themselves exactly as they are, even though they're not quite where they want to be, and then landing in the middle. I mean, kudos to that woman for putting in the work.
Such an amazing story. And here's the coolest part. So we're going to do a Q&A. One of our questions, which was actually the second question, and I'm going to make it the first question, because she, the woman who's writing in this question, can relate to the woman who left the review, is why are extremes so appealing, even though I know they don't work? This woman then went on to say, you know, she's tried Whole 30. She's seen the whole 75 hard kind of extreme, very aggressive challenge type nutrition information. And while she knows they don't work because she's done Whole 30 multiple times herself and always has the same end result, she still is like constantly drawn back to that. Oh, but this is very strict, very aggressive. I know what's expected of me. I know it doesn't work, but like, why do I want to do it again?
I think it's so appealing for a couple of reasons. Like, I always like to say our kind of method of going about sustainable fat loss is easier in a lot of ways, but there is one thing about it that makes it so much harder. And that is that you have to practice patience. And people don't want to be patient. We want what we want when we want it. And those shiny fixes, those like all the hacks and the diets and the Whole 30s and the 75 hard, they promise fast results. You're going to get those results in 30 days. You're going to be the person you want to be in 75 days. You're going to be this completely different person with this completely different body. And you and I have never promised results like that. And so even though long-term you're feeling better, you're learning better habits, you have to practice patience. And that's really, really hard. I also think in like the social media fitness world, and maybe we're getting away from them a little bit more, but not so much. You see these before and afters, and there always is like 12 weeks in between them or something like that. And people have these insane results. Well, yeah, in 12 weeks, maybe they got those insane results. But let's follow up with them in 3 months and see how they look and see what kind of habits they've established. But if that's what you're seeing as like success and progress and realistic progress, you're going to think there's something wrong with you if you don't have these dramatic changes in a few weeks. So I totally, totally get the allure of these fad diets because you don't have to be as patient and you have a very clear-cut set of rules. It's easier for some people, I used to be this way, to say I'm never eating a cookie again than it is to say, well, I'm going to have one or two, even though I might want to eat more. I'm going to moderate my portion to keep it in line with my goals. That's almost harder sometimes than just not eating a single cookie. So having a clear set of rules, being told exactly what to do, and hey, if you just follow this strict outline, you're going to get amazing results really quickly. I do get the appeal there. However, what you have to remember is, do you want to live your life like that? Because those results are only sustainable if you continue down that same path. If you lost the weight really quickly by cutting out sugar and bread and eating out and alcohol, and you're never touching anything that's not quote clean, that's how you're going to have to eat to maintain those results. So we just have to remind ourselves that there's no rush, there's no finish line. And the way we go about losing weight is going to be the way we go about maintaining that, the results. And so you have to really question, like, do I want to live a life where I only have this little list of food and there's good and bad foods and I can't ever go out to eat and enjoy my life? Or do I want to learn habits and practice some patience and really focus on long-term lasting change? So, I mean, I get it. It's hard, but you just kind of have to dig deep and figure out, what do I really want long-term?
I more than get it. Like, I am still to this day like an all or nothing thinker, and I work really hard to counteract that, but my brain loves extremes. And it wasn't until I read an Instagram post, actually, and I don't remember who wrote it or where it came from, but it was talking about how we have to stop romanticizing progress. And if you think about this, we do this from a very, very, very early age. I mean, I grew up on like Disney fairy tales and purity culture. So there's nothing worse in terms of like, you're going to live this life and, you know, you're going to be Cinderella until you meet your Prince Charming, right? And then everything's going to be perfect. I love that story. But that story is a fairy tale, right? Like, it's not real life. And I think our current culture still glorifies and valorizes that extreme. Like, oh, you got really fast results by cutting something out, and in a matter of weeks, you completely transformed your body composition. You're amazing. That is so impressive. You worked your way up from nothing and had no help doing it. You're self-made. Oh my gosh, let's give you a medal. When in reality, most people are just chipping away 1% at a time, not getting fast or overly impressive results because they realize, oh, I have to do this slowly so that it's sustainably. I also have other things going on in my life. So I can't just completely focus in on this one goal, whether it's fat loss or career advancement or whatever it is, to the point where it's super shiny and impressive and outwardly like glorified. But we don't praise people for doing that, right? We're not going to praise the person who maybe lost 100 pounds over the span of, I don't know, 5 years and has kept it off. Those people don't get recognition. It's the person who lost 100 pounds in, you know, a couple of months because they did something more extreme. That gets recognized. So I think it just boils down to our conditioning. It's appealing because that's what we praise. And I remember talking with a client who had had a similar experience where she was like, why do I keep wanting to go back to these things that I know don't work? My history shows me every single time it doesn't work. And I said, well, I don't know. Why do you? And the answer that she gave me was, what we're doing, slow, sustainable, one habit change at a time, she knows it's going to work long term, but it doesn't feel impressive. Trying to eat an extra serving of vegetables for the next couple of weeks, trying to carve out a couple of 15-minute blocks so she can get more movement into her schedule, that doesn't feel impressive to her. And so that's why she kept struggling with going back to this very clean, like, oh, nothing, do this, don't do that, eat these things, never eat those things again. It feels very clear cut. But like you mentioned, if we don't stick with it, it's not going to be impressive. And who are we living for? The satisfaction or the validation of other people who are going to like an Instagram post of our before and after pictures, or ourselves, because we feel really good about how we got the results and we're still able to eat any food that we want to.
That's such a good point. And it's, first of all, I read Cinderella last night, literally last night, to my daughter. And it ended with, and I just think it's funny you brought that up, because I noticed it in my brain last night. It ended with, and they lived happily ever after. And I just wanted to be like, do you know that's not real? Do you know that's not really how life is? But we didn't get into that before bedtime. But I have had the experience of losing a large amount of, not a large, but a decent amount of weight and getting pretty thin as an adult. And the praise was almost nonstop. It was constant. You're so tiny. Look at you. Oh my gosh. Like all the time. And how I was achieving that was, first of all, breastfeeding, like, which I know it doesn't work for everybody, but it, in this case with one of my three children, the weight fell off. I was also under eating. And when I wasn't under eating, I was binging and purging. So that's how that was being achieved, in no quality methods at all. Now I'm in such a better place with food, and I have found this, you know, balance, and I'm living happily in the messy middle, and I'm 20 pounds heavier. So you don't get the same feedback that you do when you're 20 pounds lighter. So I think that's an amazing point, is we need to, first of all, don't comment on people's bodies unless you 100% know they are achieving it through sustainable methods and they're proud and happy with their progress. So really just never comment on people's bodies.
Unless invited, just don't.
Yes, exactly. Just don't do it. Like, just, there's no, probably no good that can come from it. You never know what somebody's going through. But I also think when you were saying, like, you just got to chip away at it 1% at a time, but we don't really recognize that. I think that's why it's also really important to look back, you know, on to yourself, keep your blinders on and focus on yourself, but look back 6 months, 12 months, because I can promise you in the moment, it doesn't feel like enough. It's not that exciting to eat an extra serving of vegetables. But when you go back 6 or 12 months, when you've been working at this, those wins are going to be stacked up so high that you can't help but notice, like, oh, I actually have done something really amazing. I've changed my relationship with food in my body. I've changed my, you know, diet in a really health promoting way. That is progress to be celebrated. So I totally agree. We need to start celebrating that. And we need to understand that true change takes time. So don't forget to look back and think about how far you've come and freaking clap for yourself. Be proud of yourself. You're doing something really hard. You should be so proud.
Yeah, the world's not going to validate or cheer you on going the slow, sustainable route. So you have to be your own cheerleader or hire one to be in your corner. I mean, we freaking obsess over our clients for doing these things, but that's because they know no one else is going to. So I need you, you know, as a coach in my corner telling me this is the right thing. Because it is harder. I mean, you mentioned this. Finding moderation, finding balance is much harder. It requires a lot more skill than saying, I'm going to keep all these bad, I'm using air quotes, foods out of my house, so I'm never tempted by them. That's much easier than having the food in your house and having to learn how to eat it mindfully, I think.
1,000%. Oh, I think it's so much harder. It was so much harder for me personally.
Yeah, me too. But if you play that out, you can keep the foods out of your house. But then again, do you want to live your life without them forever? Probably not. So you're going to bring them back in. You're going to binge on them. You don't know how to, you know, have a relationship with this kind of food because you've never been taught how to. So then you have to do it all over again and get the food out of your house. So that's a different kind of hard in terms of you're likely never going to reach your goal going that more extreme route because you're not actually building skills or habits. So it's akin to that expression, like, choose your hard. Do you want to build the skills and habits that allow you to eat anything and everything in a healthy capacity, even though it takes longer? Or do you want to choose the hard that is, you see results really quickly, but then they slip through your fingers on repeat?
And for anybody who's like, oh, I just, quote, can't, I just can't stop at one. I can't do it. That used to be me for so long. And now, I mean, I have three kids. There's always, always sweets in my house. So if I was waiting for the time where there wasn't going to be anything, no temptation, I didn't have to eat it all to get it out, it was just never happening. And I will kind of, like I was just saying, like look back and think like, my God, right now we have some leftover cake and leftover donuts sitting on the counter in our little cake stand. A couple of years ago, first of all, it wouldn't have been there anymore because I would have binged on all of it to get it, quote, out of the house, even though more is always coming in. And it doesn't even tempt me. It's not like occupying my brain. And it took me time to get there. I had to practice it over and over and over again and fail a bunch of times and just keep committing. But it's so much more freeing. I think a lot of people think it's not. It's just too hard. I just can't do it. They tell themselves that story. They're just an all or nothing person. But if you change that story and you learn to live with these kinds of food in your house and you moderated your portions and you just became that kind of eater who can enjoy their favorite foods and reach their goals, like switch the story in your brain that you're telling yourself. And then, like you said, it's a skill. So skills need to be practiced. So just keep practicing it.
It's a muscle. So you're going to suck at first, right?
Yes.
You have no muscle of self-control. You've never been taught that by conventional diets. So it is something that comes with time and practice. But I agree with you 100%. Okay, next question. We're going to be here for ages. We do this every time.
I know.
Next question. Are artificial sweeteners bad for you? I see you and Coach Lauren drinking diet soda from time to time, and it makes me feel better about drinking my diet beverages. But are they bad?
Okay, this is a hot button topic right now because the World Health Organization just recommended that people do not use non-nutritive, non-sugar sweeteners, okay? And what we need to do is look at the actual evidence. What is the evidence telling us? So there has been a recent meta-analysis specifically designed to investigate, are these good or bad for us, right? Are we factoring for all, you know, variables? And what they have found is that there is favorable health and body composition outcomes when looking at the evidence at large. There is still not any overwhelming human evidence that suggests in normal amounts, right, like in the actual dose that humans are consuming them, that there is any reason for you to avoid them unless it's a personal choice. I always want to like preference that. Like, I'm not trying to convince anybody to eat artificial sweeteners and include them in their diet. If you want to eliminate those, that's on you. That's a totally valid choice. But I think for most people, there's so much fear mongering out there around all kinds of ingredients, but so much so with artificial sweeteners, that I think it can be comforting to know you can drink diet soda if you want, if you enjoy it. We were just talking before we hit record, like it brings me so much joy to have a diet soda every day. It's in my protein powder. Like I don't have the brain capacity to be constantly on the lookout for every single packaged food that I eat, making sure that it doesn't contain them. Again, if you want to do that, that is fine. Just know that the overwhelming human evidence does not point to any negative health outcomes, and it can be beneficial for those with body, you know, composition goals as well. So there has, of course, people throw out that I believe it was a study done on like rats eating like 300 times what a normal human would eat in a day. Yeah, that's probably not going to be awesome for our health. Like consuming like massive quantities of anything isn't awesome for our health. But if you consume it in a normal way, you will be okay. So yeah, I want to hear your thoughts on it too.
My thoughts are very, very similar to yours. So I am going to just call myself out. I used to be one of those cringy, like clean eating only kind of nutrition coaches, because that's what I falsely believed when I was in my like disordered eating days. So if it doesn't come from the earth, if it has any sort of chemical or processed ingredient, it is terrible for you. And I'm so thankful that my education and my experience have taught me otherwise, because every food, unless you're growing it in your backyard, is in some way, shape, or form processed. And unless there is an like adverse consequence, there's something negative that's going to occur in your health outcomes or in your body composition as a result of eating that thing, you don't have to minimize it or cut it out, period. Especially if it brings you joy. So if we look at the research, like you said, Lauren, first of all, this is something that I learned in my undergraduate degree, because I spent a lot of those 2 years primarily doing research with rats because my degree was psychology. So like we fed them sugar and water and we kind of saw how they reacted to certain stimuli. I did this research. And what I learned in my undergraduate degree is that not all research is created equal. So for example, you can have something called a randomized controlled trial, which in the research world is the gold standard. We have basically eliminated all possible biases of the researchers, of the participants. Like we have made this a blind research study where nobody is going to be influenced outside of what the research is trying to assess for. Then we have other kinds of research studies, like observational research studies. And that's where we're just observing what happens in research participants over time. And that is the kind of research that the World Health Organization used primarily to support their claim. Now, here's what happens with observational research. We don't know what comes first, the chicken or the egg. So it's called reverse causality, right? And they're saying, oh, but wait a second. People who are eating non-nutritive sweeteners or artificial sweetener struggle with weight and have poor health markers. Do we know that to be true? Or could it be possible that people who are overweight and struggle with health markers are reaching for more diet products with artificial sweetener, right? We don't know which came first. There's no way that observational research can show us that. So that's why when we're looking at observational research, we have to look at it with a very critical eye. So after reading the WHO guidelines and the research that they used and following a lot of very credible research professionals in the nutrition space, in the health space, I'm not worried at all. I'm not going to stop drinking my diet soda. I am not concerned whatsoever because, like you said, the strongest research, randomized controlled trials done in humans, show that if you are replacing a sugar sweetened beverage, soda, juice, frappuccino, whatever it is, with an artificial sweetener, you will get desirable outcomes. You will likely have a more favorable body composition and you will likely have improved health markers because artificial sweetener doesn't raise your blood sugar, unlike sugar sweeteners. So keep eating it. Keep doing what you're doing and don't stress over little things like this that kind of prey on the fear that we have around specific foods. Now, if new research comes out and it says, hey, this is probably not going to be great for your health long-term in terms of anything, not just artificial sweeteners, but like any food in general, Lauren and I will be the first to tell you that because you bet I'm going to be changing my diet if that actually is the case. Because of course, I want to eat well and live well and move well. And I know that what I put in directly impacts how I feel and my output. But right now, the research doesn't tell us that about artificial sweeteners. We don't have to cut them out.
If the research ever points to that, I will be brokenhearted, but I will make the necessary adjustments because like you, I do, you know, my health always will come first. So I will make them dragging my feet and stomping and pouting, but I'll do it. I also wanted to say, like, according to the FDA, the acceptable daily intake of artificial sweeteners, because we were just talking about like the dose is really what you need to look at as well. And so much of this research is done at insanely high dosage. So the acceptable dose is set at 3,200 to 4,000 milligrams per day. Nicole, do you know what the average diet soda contains?
No, tell me.
180. It's a teeny tiny little fraction. So again, I am never telling people drink diet soda all day long. You should be drinking mostly water. If you drink a diet soda, I don't want you being scared that all your health is going down the toilet. You will be fine. Enjoy it. Move on. Drink some water later.
So true. Yeah. Drink water. I mean, drink
yes.
foods that don't have added sugar or added artificial sugar. But also, like we talked about before in a previous Q&A podcast episode, I think the poison's in the dose. So yes. You're fine. I'm going to have a Diet Coke today and I'm going to think of all of you.
I will too, but I'm a Diet Dr. Pepper person for life. Love it so much.
I feel like that's the ongoing battle. Diet Dr. Pepper versus Diet Coke. Who wins?
And no one likes Diet Pepsi. That's gross. That's not worth it. Don't drink Diet Pepsi.
Okay, next question. And this is one that I feel like has been very, what's the word I'm looking for? Has been very relevant lately because a lot of people have been getting sick. I don't know if you've seen that in your clients, but there's just lots of germy stuff going around. The question is, how do I refocus on quote, getting through when I'm sick.
When you're sick, the focus needs to be rest. Like, it just has to be rest. You can take a break from your, you know, if you're in a fat loss focus, right, then you can take a break from that. Give your body the nourishment that it needs to recover. Give your body the rest that it needs to recover. You'll get better in a few days, and zero progress has ever been lost in a few days or a week or however long it takes you to recover. But recovery has to be top priority above anything else, above forcing yourself to go to the gym and force yourself to do a workout. Being sick is a stressor on your body. Working out is a stressor on your body. Being in a deficit is a stressor on your body. Your body can only handle so much before it starts to shut down. So when you are sick, make getting better the focus and the priority. Understand that that might look a little different from your day-to-day diet and your day-to-day activity levels, and that's fine. It's just really giving yourself guilt-free rest. And with my clients too, I always encourage, like, hey, if your appetite is low, that's okay, because we always want to focus on eating to your, you know, hunger and fullness cues. If you can incorporate some nutrition, like, I always recommend like smoothies, because I think they probably go down a little bit easier. And then you can really bulk that up and sip on it throughout the day, and you can really get a lot of nutrition in. And then you might notice an uptick in hunger once you're feeling better, because you've been undernourishing for a while. That's all normal and okay. I think knowing that it might happen is helpful. Obviously, everybody's different. Every sickness is a little different. But just knowing that resting needs to be top priority. Nutrition might look a little different for a week or so. All normal. Just focus on getting better. There will be time afterwards to get back to it and refocus. But it's okay to let your body rest and recover.
Yeah. Amen. And we use action steps with our clients. So, like, hey, here's the action step you're going to work on for the next 10 to 12 days until we have our next coaching call. And so if a client ever is, you know, writing to me and they're like, Nicole, I'm the whole family sick, or like, I came down with this really gross bug, the action step just becomes do what you need to do to get better as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't care if that means you're only eating saltines and drinking ginger ale because you have the stomach flu. I don't care if that means like you have to eat comfort foods because you have the worst sore throat of your life and you can't get yourself out of bed. Like, it just doesn't matter, because we're looking at a blip on the radar in the big picture. And I always think of illness a little bit like injury, where if you're rushing to get back to what you think you need to do, right, those healthy behaviors, if you're rushing back too quickly, you're just going to delay your recovery. And then it's more time spent in this not great sort of half-ass showing up space, when what I would much rather you do, take all the time that you need to get well, get better, feel like yourself again, and then you can go back to hit the ground running with your healthy behaviors. So give yourself some grace and just rest.
I actually had a previous client reach out to me on Instagram to ask me, how do I get through the first trimester? She's pregnant. How do I get through the first trimester and still stick with my healthy habits? And my response was, you might not. And that's totally okay. You have to get through it. Like, the first trimester for so many women, for myself, knocks you out. I had three very different pregnancies. One, I couldn't keep anything down. I threw up all the time. It was very unpleasant. So what was I eating? I was eating crackers and pretzels and trying to nibble on like dry cereal, just do anything. Cheez-Its, I remember I could like nibble on those a little bit. Anything I could keep down. If you notice, everything I mentioned was a carb. That's all I could do to get through it. And I eventually felt better, and I eventually was able to eat more normal foods. But it was like 16 weeks of like the worst hangover you've ever had in your life every single day. I was laying on the couch a lot. You know, it wasn't fun, but I got through it, and I had no standard set for myself to do anything besides survive. Similar with the other two, wasn't as intense, but the exhaustion that hits you, the nausea that hits you, it's survival mode. You will be fine. It's a couple of months. You're growing a life. So you can, if there's ever a time to kind of give yourself some grace, it's then. Like, you have to, it's okay to just be in survival mode and do what you have to do to get through it. So if anybody is experiencing that really challenging first trimester, survival mode, you'll be fine. Do what you have to do.
I couldn't agree more. And to kind of play on the opposite side of that coin, I was thinking back to, so recently our house got hit with some bad cold, nothing more than that, just a really bad cold. And it kind of took me out for a week or so. And so I dialed back on my workouts. I think I missed three of my workouts because I was just so exhausted. And I knew that pushing more and expecting my body to do more would not benefit me in any way. But my appetite wasn't really impacted. So I know that eating nutritious food with vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and getting my protein in is only going to help me to feel better. So I also didn't use it as an excuse to be like, well, I'm sick. Like, I don't have perfect circumstances, so I might as well just eat ice cream every day until I'm feeling better, right? So there is that, which is the completely opposite end of the illness spectrum, right? We're not talking about like really terrible sickness or first trimester pregnancy stuff that is just wildly outside of your control. I had a cold and that was fine because I could still show up and do all of my nutrition habits. I just had to assess, okay, well, am I having to gag down this food? If so, I would not have done that. Or is this actually leaving me feeling a little bit better? And I'm just going to scale back on my physical activity, which was the case. So obviously you have to use your discretion in terms of like, what kind of sick are we talking about? And how will these things leave you feeling afterwards? Worse or potentially better?
That is a good point. I talk about this a lot where if you want to find excuses, they are abundantly available. We all lead very busy, hectic lives. You can, if you're looking, you will always find a reason to not follow through with the promises you've made to yourself, with the habits that you're looking to, you know, build up. There is always a reason to be like, oh, I can't do it right now. I'm busy. I'm sick. I'm this, I'm that. I'll just keep pushing it off, pushing it off. You're never going to get to it. So very valid point. There is a line to be walked and you can't throw in the towel anytime you have the sniffles, and you also can't push through every single thing in your life and be so rigid in your, you know, sticking to the plan. There has to be that flexibility there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, Lauren, next question is a doozy. And it actually is a question that I received not in a little Q&A box on Instagram, but on a discovery call. And that question is, are you anti-Ozempic? What are your thoughts? Or should I go first? I don't want to.
No, I can't. I'll go first.
Okay.
So I think we're going to agree mostly. First of all, clearly not a medical professional. So this is my opinion based on, you know, quality sources and, you know, actual true medical professionals and what they're saying about it. So from my understanding is that if you are a person who is very overweight, has always struggled with their weight, just has never been able to, you know, achieve some fat loss results that they've been looking for their health or just their desire, Ozempic can be a game changer. From what I'm hearing, it can be an amazing thing for a certain population of people who have very much struggled with their weight their whole life. What I'm feeling like it's not beneficial for is your average everyday person looking to lose 15, 20 pounds, because it is a medication that you are meant to be on for life. It's treating obesity as a disease. So if you, you know, have those last 20 pounds to lose, I've always wanted to get down to, you know, 150 or whatever, and you're thinking Ozempic is your shortcut way to do it, you have to understand that as soon as you stop taking the shots, you are going to bounce right back. It's another quick fix for you, basically. So understand that, yes, for a certain population, it appears to be extremely beneficial. For your average everyday person who is just looking for some quick weight loss, it's just that, another quick fix. From what I've read, many people bounce back the other way. You know, they might gain back more than they've lost initially. I've heard of a lot of negative side effects, like a lot of nausea. That's why they can't eat, because they're so nauseous. I certainly don't want to live my life nauseous. And again, getting to the root of the problem, you're not fixing your habits. You're just giving yourself some medication so that you don't feel hungry without actually achieving this true lasting change through sustainable habit building. So if you're in the certain population where it's going to be helpful and life-changing, then I'm 100% for it. If you're not in that population, I strongly suggest you go a more sustainable route where you are practicing habits and true change over time, just like we were talking about at the beginning of this episode.
I agree with you in that I think in order to answer this question, we have to understand obesity a little bit better, in that it is a disease and it just doesn't come down to a lack of self-control. So I think our society wrongly blames people who live in larger bodies for being lazy or not having enough self-control, when nothing could be further from the truth. Genetics play a huge component. And what I've learned from obesity specialists like Dr. Spencer Nadolsky, highly recommend him as in terms of like a breaking through the BS when it comes to obesity, is taking a look at how different individuals struggle with weight differently, but also how their psychology is different when it comes to obsessive thoughts of food. And what research shows us is that some people are thinking about food all the time. Like they literally have obsessive ruminating thoughts about food and their appetite is never satiated. Other people, like myself, can go hours without thinking about food because I've had a balanced meal and now I'm fine and you know my body is responding accordingly. If you are one of those individuals who has been overweight for a very long time, feels like you're never satiated or satisfied, is potentially pre-diabetic or diabetic, I think Ozempic and other semaglutide type medications can be a hugely helpful tool in the toolbox. So am I anti-Ozempic? Nope, not at all. I think it can be a really helpful tool for the right population of people. Now, my biggest issue with Ozempic is that a lot of people are on it for short-term results, knowing that they will eventually come off of it because maybe insurance doesn't cover it. They can only afford to be on it for so long. It's not necessarily prescribed by a doctor, but they are just looking for it as another quick fix, magic pill type solution. And what we know is that semaglutide targets centers in your brain that reduce your appetite. So you are not hungry and you eat significantly less. To give you a little bit of backstory, the woman that asked me this question, she recently was on a call with me, a Zoom call with me, because her doctor prescribed Ozempic. And she was saying, I think you should connect with a nutrition professional so that when you do come off of it, you don't experience weight regain, which I respect. This woman was worried that she wasn't eating enough because she had no appetite while on Ozempic. So for sure, she was losing weight, but she was like, I really don't feel like my body's getting all the nutrients that it needs. Is that a problem? So I really respected her for kind of wanting to form this little team of professionals working around her and say, hey, how can I make sure I'm getting as many nutrients as possible while I'm taking Ozempic? And if and when my doctor tries to wean me off, how can I ensure that I don't gain the weight back? Because when you stop the semaglutide, your appetite returns. So we need to make sure that we're doing everything possible, like eating a sufficient amount of protein to keep the appetite regulated. So for most people listening who are trying to lose 20, 30, 40 pounds, and you know that there's a ton of wiggle room in terms of your lifestyle habits, your dietary habits, is it for you? No, probably not. But am I anti a tool, a medication that could help someone and their brain chemistry to feel better in their body, to improve their health markers? Never, never. I mean, if I take this in a different direction, I have mentioned before, I struggle with anxiety and it's been debilitating at certain times in my life. I took my toolbox and said, okay, what can I try? Tried meditation, tried like conventional talk therapy. My therapist then recommended I try things like magnesium and building in more time for parasympathetic activity, like rest, digest type stuff, yoga, walking, not for exercise, but just for, you know, parasympathetic activity. Tried all those things. Tried CBD, tried, you know, like more natural solutions. Was it helpful? Maybe a little, but at the end of the day, my brain chemistry still needed more. So I'm on a medication for anxiety. Is that bad? Does that mean like I'm worse or weaker than the next person who doesn't need medication? No, it's just what my body and my brain needed. And thank goodness that medication is in my toolbox because it helps significantly and I can live my life without anxiety controlling my life. I see other types of medications in the same way. Would I personally recommend trying lifestyle intervention first to see what you can do without medication? Because a lot of medications come with nasty side effects. Yeah. But if none of that is working, and you've genuinely tried the evidence-based, slow, sustainable approach, it might be an option for you.
I'm so glad that you brought up the fact that obesity is a disease. It's not just like your average person who has some weight to lose, right? There are so, it's like a very complex disease. And it's not just like they're eating too much. I mean, yeah, I guess technically to get down to it, sure, that's technically what it is. But there are socioeconomic factors. A lot of obese people have a lot of trauma in their life, in their history. There's access to food. There's time obligations. There's so much more. Like there's genetics, like you said, that goes into it beyond like, oh, well, they're just eating too much. They need to eat less. Like that is such a simplistic, over-reductionist way to look at it. And it's, to me, it's somebody who just doesn't understand like what obesity really is. So I love that you compared it to mental health because they both are valid diseases that might require some medication. One of my kids is on anti-anxiety meds and it has helped her tremendously. So I am for medication in the right circumstances, 110%. I am not for them for these like quick fixes when you haven't actually given the basic foundational health habits a true consistent chance. Like you said, should we start there with most people? Yeah, let's start there first and then see how we're feeling and reassess and see if we need to be adding tools.
And obviously that's not something that you or I would do, right? We're not prescribing any medication to any of our clients. No. We are outsourcing that. That is completely outside of our scope, but we will help connect you with a medical professional who can, you know, take those next steps. Lauren and I are all about the nutrition and the healthy habits that we can help you to implement in your real life with or without medication.
Also, can I just say really quickly, it is insane to me. I've seen ads for Ozempic from like med spas now. I'm like, that's nuts that I could go get like my Botox and my Ozempic in the same place. Like that's just really bananas to me. And it does not sit well with me.
It reminds me a little bit of whenever I go to the dermatologist, which is often as a pasty white redhead, I always I always see their fat sculpting videos in the waiting room and like how they're going to freeze your fat off. And I just have to put my blinders on. Like I just don't see that stuff anymore because, I just have to look past it.
Yeah.
Okay. For sure. We've got one last question and we have 10 minutes to answer it. I think we can do it. But the question is, am I going to have to give up my caffeine in order to create results?
This question is asked after I have finished my second cup of coffee for the day. So I held it up as though people can see. No, of course you do not have to give up caffeine. Again, there is never a one size fits all answer. If anybody is saying black and white, yes, drink all the caffeine. No, give it up 100%. There's a range, right? Some people metabolize it really well. Some people struggle with it. For some people, it causes anxiety. For some people, it doesn't. You have to know yourself. Upwards of 400 milligrams of caffeine per day is considered generally safe, which is about 4 or 5 cups of coffee, depending on the strength of the coffee, obviously. So know yourself, know how does caffeine affect you, play around. If you're interested in seeing, like, I wonder how I can do without it, play around with it. But I do think it's more important. You know, I was telling you earlier, like my husband can come home from work at 5 o'clock and have a cup of coffee. And he was laughing when he got his Apple Watch. He's like, I sleep like a champ. I'm a champion sleeper, and that's drinking caffeine at 5 p.m. I don't drink any caffeine I don't drink any coffee after usually like 9 a.m. and then I'll have my diet soda in the afternoon and call it a day on the caffeine. For me, I know that's what works best. I don't like to drink caffeine later in the day. It will disrupt my sleep. So you just have to know yourself. Some people can tolerate higher levels. Some people need lower levels. It impacts us all differently. And no, you don't have to give it up if it's something that you feel good about, including in your everyday life. So yeah, the answer of course is it depends. It depends on how it's affecting you and what your goals are and how you metabolize it.
That would be my first question to this individual is, why do you feel like you'd have to give it up? Like, do you not feel good about your caffeine consumption? If so, I will be more than happy to help you minimize it or decrease it. But if you feel great about your caffeine consumption and it's feeling good for you, you don't have to cut anything out if you don't want to. I think we have to ask a lot of more questions to get to the bottom of this. Like, what is your goal, first of all? And this individual may have a fat loss goal, in which case, are you adding like 3/4 of your mug of creamer and then a little bit of caffeine, a little bit of coffee? That may be a barrier to your fat loss goal. Or are you feeling like caffeine or caffeinated beverages are bad? In which case I would, you know, help you to reassess that story, that script, because that's not the case. I am not anti-caffeine. Personally, I'm not a caffeine girly. It just doesn't do me a lot of favors. So I have my matcha in the morning, maybe a Diet Coke throughout the day, and that's it. I'm not a coffee drinker, but that's just because personally it feels best for me. And I love that you mentioned the experiment, because when I was really trying to manage my anxiety, bringing this full circle, I eliminated all caffeine. So I would not have my matcha in the morning. I only drank decaffeinated tea, like as a hot beverage on a cold day. And that was it. And I just genuinely wanted to see if it left me feeling any better. It didn't. It didn't change anything, because turns out I don't drink a lot of caffeine anyway, so it wasn't a big issue. So I added my matcha back in the morning because that brings me joy. And it has less caffeine than some other beverages. So for me, it was not an issue. But if you're feeling some kind of way about your caffeine consumption, sure, you can change it. But if you're feeling good about it, we're not going to take anything away from you, period.
I know. When you told me that question was asked and the person seemed concerned about it, it broke my heart, because I feel like it's like they're so used to coming to, you know, nutrition advice with a, what am I going to have to give up type of a mindset. And it's like, you don't have to give up anything that you love. You really don't. You can just learn to include it into your life in a goal supportive way. That's what it boils down to. With the caffeine specifically, I do remember asking somebody, like a friend, who had been trying to cut it all out. And I was like, so what, like, can I ask why? Like, why do you feel like you need to cut out caffeine? And their answer was they felt like they were overly reliant on it for energy throughout the day. So that's another situation when, like, okay, that could do a deeper dive into that. Are your sleep habits off? Are you running yourself ragged? And that's why maybe the caffeine is like a red flag that you want to examine. Again, there's just so many reasons, so many different reasons as to why somebody might want to reduce, cut out. There's just no black and white answer. It depends answer.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I have a client who right now is decreasing her coffee consumption simply because she acknowledged she drank zero water throughout the day. So we're trying to add in more water, which by default is decreasing her coffee consumption, but it wasn't because coffee needs to be cut out. That was just sort of like a byproduct. I've also had clients before where coffee is kind of treated a little differently because it can be somewhat of an appetite suppressant. So sometimes people would have like a latte and then they're not hungry for a meal. That can be a problem because you're not getting quality nutrients. So for sure, maybe we have the meal first and then we have the coffee. So if there's some kind of health situation going on, or you're not getting quality sleep and you're overly reliant on coffee or caffeine, it's a different conversation. For sure, we can help to change that habit. But in terms of caffeine itself being bad or evil or something you have to cut out, no, no, no. Carry on.
Also, coffee is very different from lattes, frappuccinos, et cetera. So just putting that out there as well. And coffee's been linked to a longer life. So I'm just saying, if you love your coffee, drink your coffee.
Coffee drinkers, unite. Just kidding. I got one. But I mean, you guys unite.
I am. Yes, we're all uniting. Very happy and energized.
God, this was so fun. Lauren and I always have a blast. I hope that you are taking something away from this episode. If you are, our ask for you today is that you will please snap a screenshot, share this podcast to your stories, Facebook, Instagram, wherever you hang out, and leave a 5-star review. Maybe we'll even read yours the next time. And as always, if you have a nutrition related question, send us a DM and we will try to incorporate it in our next Q&A episode.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com, where you can sign up for my weekly emails, where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.